from experience, I took a bus from Minneapolis to Chicago, and it was 8 hours. We stopped in Madison for like an hour to eat and go to the bathroom. This group of people brought catfish to eat, which is probably one of the worst things you can bring in a small space. Yeah. Smelling and
any fish.
Thought it was kind of rude. And this guy next to me opened up a jar of pickles. Hold on, I'm not done. I'll get there.
Yes.
And proceeded to chug the brine as a liquid beverage. Do you remember those old soccer commercials where people would drink Gatorade?
Yes.
Like it was the first time they had anything to drink.
And the colors were splashing everywhere.
He was drinking so much pickle brine. Oh my God. I mean, and I had never seen that before. I didn't know that people do drink
I didn't know until today.
I was
today I learned.
Horrified.
Welcome back, everyone, to Salem and Banks Present. I am your host, Nina. I will be your Salem today, and I am joined by a wonderful guest host.
I will be your Banks. This is Briga Bay.
Yes, my girl. I'm so excited that you're here.
Thank you for having me. I put a request in to do this one.
And rightfully so, because honestly,
it is in my top five favorite movies.
I mean, it's just iconic. It's a perfect movie, like, all around. And on top of that, is a perfect movie for Thanksgiving.
For sure. Well, it has no competition, too, because, like, every year we would just watch this.
Yeah.
And then I bought it on DVD, and I would watch it by myself, and then I would make my friends watch it, and then I would watch it with my family.
It's so good.
It's like
it's so
three good. Or four times a year. Like, okay, this is ridiculous.
I love it.
It's great. And we saw this movie together early in our friendship.
I know. This is, like, a bonding movie for us. It was very, very fun.
One of our first movie nights.
Such a good time. It's that turkey time of year. We're talking about the ultimate Thanksgiving movie, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
So this is prime John Hughes, 1987.
Does it get better?
1 year old.
Oh.
I don't remember the first time I saw this movie because I just kind of grew up watching it. It was like a movie we had on VHS that was played every single year, so probably three or four, I figured out, you know, what it was. Aww. And just kept watching it every
year.
It's
so cute. It's good. It's nice to have something that, like, not only do you grow up with it and you love. Lily and I were talking about this in the last episode in Hocus Pocus, where sometimes as a kid you grow up and you watch a movie, you love it, and then when you return to it again as an adult, you kind of realize maybe it's not that great or you're a little let down. And this is the movie that, like Hocus Pocus, it does not do that. It totally holds up. To me, it gets better and better every time I watch it. Yeah.
For sure. I laugh at the same stuff every time, even though I know it's coming, and I will cry at the same, that music cue at the end.
Oh my God.
When you hear it, if I watch it alone, it's like my fake eyelashes are coming off. My eyeliner is running down my face like Alice Cooper. It just hits me every time.
It is so good. It's funny. It really, I know it's the cliche, but it is the movie that will make you laugh and cry. Mm-hmm. Totally, totally will.
For sure.
So we're going to go ahead and do that B.O.B. That's the back of box description. We're just going to get that out there just for the folks who may not be quite as familiar with the movie. We also kind of like to go over it because it's a little bit silly sometimes the way they word these descriptions. So this right here, folks, is the back-of-box description for Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. A new comedy from John Hughes, one of the most successful filmmakers of the 80s, and the man behind such hits as Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Some Kind of Wonderful, She's Having a Baby, and The Great Outdoors. The thought of holiday travel drives most people to despair. Some people are merely delayed. Some are completely rerouted. But if you're really unlucky, you get Del Griffith. So mean. Neil Page, Steve Martin, a successful, urbane advertising executive on his way home from New York to Chicago to spend Thanksgiving with his family. He's unfortunate enough to be seated next to Del Griffith, John Candy, a shower curtain ring salesman. It's just so insulting. When a snowstorm causes the flight to be rerouted, Neil finds himself trapped in the hysterical nightmare of Del's determination to be helpful. One disaster propels the mismatched pair into another, and Neil begins to despair of ever reaching home or escaping from the turkey. Strange last line.
That was a weird, yeah.
They're
calling him the turkey.
They're calling him the turkey.
I mean, I get it.
I guess.
What a dig, though. Shower curtain salesman.
Okay, terrible.
Can we talk about that for a second, though?
Yes.
Were shower curtains hard to come across in 1987?
I don't think so.
Is that just something you get at Target or Walmart?
I would actually think they were more common than like a glass door shower. Like, wouldn't that be a more common thing?
For sure, but why would you need a salesman for them?
He's not even the shower curtain salesman. He's the shower curtain ring salesman.
Yes.
But you never know. These in sales, there are so many niche.
I guess. I mean, they're a dime a dozen. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
This is not hard to find.
I know.
And then
less is hard. That's all the more reason to feel like, oh, like that's something you could get anywhere
easily.
Why is this guy
for
doing
cheap
this?
For nothing?
Yeah.
How much is a thing of curtain rings?
I mean, like $4.
In 1987, it was probably cheaper.
I know.
He always acts like all of his customers owe him some favor. Like, he did them a great deal on these shower curtain rings.
Giving them away for free.
If you think about a motel, mm-hmm. he sells their supply of shower curtain rings.
Right.
I mean, boxes could that be?
I know.
It's not like he broke some major deal that it's not like they bought a bunch of cars off of him for on the cheap or something.
Yeah.
It's just so funny to me. Like, shower curtain rings.
I know. It's perfectly random because it's so insanely out
it's
there
way and specific
and that's what makes it, you know. It's like in my improv days, that's what they always used to tell us, is like, if you can be really specific, just the sheer randomness of your choices, that's gonna be the thing that will make people giggle. I don't know why, and that's just like that. It's just like that.
When anyone asks Neil what he does, he just says marketing.
Yeah.
You don't really know exactly. It looks like print marketing mm-hmm. from the beginning. You know, they're looking at kind of these model.
Yeah.
These spreads the boss is trying to decide on. But he doesn't say what he does. Where
right.
Dell, it's like, it's specifically, mm-hmm. he's a shower curtain ring.
And just
salesman.
How they like put themselves, like just the differences in how they put themselves out there is so exactly that. It's like Dell would be like, well, I am the salesman of this and that. It's like he has this pride in it, and like he knows, like he owns what he is, and he uses that as a charm, and he uses that to like have some confidence, whether he totally buys it or not. You know, he displays that, like people find him friendly. And then like Neil Page is, on the other hand, is just like, don't talk to me. Yeah, I do that thing, like that's my job, whatever, I just want to get home. Like he doesn't, there's no friendliness to him at all.
Whatsoever.
Yeah. He's over it. Totally over it. To be fair, when you're done with a hard day at work, you just want to go home. So for it to take like 3 days to get home would really, really suck. That would suck.
So I read that this movie was actually inspired by a real life event that John Hughes experienced.
I read that.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
It took him like 5 days to get home
from
New York to Chicago, which should only be a couple hour flight.
Yeah. That would be horrible.
That sounds horrible. That would not happen in this day and age with smartphones.
Exactly. I was telling Patty, I was like, you know, there's definitely certain improvements that in some way don't make this hold up, but overall, like, this could very well still easily happen, just because if weather is bad enough, you can't get a flight. And
that is true.
And yeah, and it's hard to like get, especially if you're going somewhere very far, it's hard to get a driver for that, even if it's an Uber or something. Like in some ways it's like, even as advanced as we've come, there's still with transportation, there's still problems, like the same kind of problems a little bit.
I have been delayed twice because the plane was frozen. I didn't know that could happen. I didn't know my plane was like a slab of meat or fish. When they tell you, oh, we need to thaw the plane, you're like,
thaw that bird.
Excuse me?
It really is Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Oh my God, that's great. What was your first impression, or like, what's your first memory of first seeing this movie?
Of this movie? I was so young, so it's not a specific memory. It's just one that's like always on. Like I was 1 year old when it came out.
So
my parents were huge John Hughes fans. Mm-hmm. So I grew up watching, you know, Ferris Bueller a million times, Home Alone, obviously. Mm-hmm. And Planes, Trains, and Automobiles was in heavy rotation every year. And probably my brother and I would try to watch it, you know, in July or something because we just thought it was funny. But I realized each year as I would grow, I would notice different things.
Mm-hmm.
And also, my parents stopped telling me to, like, close my eyes or cover my ears, you know, in certain parts. Not that there's anything too bad.
Yeah.
I do remember the first time I noticed that there was naked ladies on the taxi cab.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I never noticed that.
Like, oh, my God.
There's naked ladies.
I know. It's so, like, radical. I do remember when I first saw this, and I was probably, like, 8. Like, I was pretty little, but not, like, tiny, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I remember it. And I thought it was very funny. I thought, you know, and I knew both of them because I'd grown up with Home Alone.
Uh-huh.
And I thought Steve Martin was very funny. And so I enjoyed it, you know, just as in a general audience kind of way. And then I do remember in the end, when you find out, like, Dell's actual story, like, how much my heart just, like, went out for him. Like, I was so moved by that. And it was one of those first moments as a kid where you go, oh my God, like, I don't think anyone really ever asked him in the movie, like, anything. Nobody fucking asked him shit about him, and he did nothing but ask about other people. And, you know, it's just so interesting to me when, like, when you can see that in a person in real life too, when you go, oh, like, that person gave so much but didn't ask for anything back. And I always see that with Dell, and it's like, just in that, and the theme makes this already a perfect Thanksgiving movie. It's like, just
there is a huge moral and lesson there of, you know, sympathizing with someone, not knowing their background or where they're coming from. You know, you kind of start siding with Neil and thinking, this guy's an idiot. Like, how annoying. Do I get rid of him? And then you really see him for his heart and who he is. And you realize, oh, gosh, I'm the jerk for feeling that way.
I know. And it's just, that ending just is perfection. Like, you do the whole time see Neil get, like, consistently very annoyed. But when he does lash out at Dell, it's like he feels a lot of regret but still doesn't stop himself from doing it again. And so he continues to, like, obviously the first time when he goes off on him in the hotel room or the motel room,
that's one of my favorite lines.
It's just so good.
And then Dell's reaction is, I hope you wake up so stiff you can't even move.
Yeah.
Just every time. That is such a great line.
When you're, like, getting older, that's, like, the line that you're like, ooh, ouch. That's so good. Oh, my God. That scene is also, like, the best acting.
That's one of the best scenes. Yeah, for sure.
It's so good.
Have you ever seen the spoof that Family Guy did?
Yes.
Where they do it, like, almost verbatim. They just change one word.
It's so perfect. Oh, my God. It's like, I'm the real article.
I like me.
I like me.
My wife likes me.
Oh, it's so precious.
That makes everyone feel like such a jerk when you watch that scene. And you're totally siding with Neil. Just like, oh my gosh, this guy's so annoyed. I'll think about lines from that movie in my everyday life where someone is going on and on with a story. And I hear in my head, have a point.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't say
makes it. Makes it a little more fun for the listener.
And then, you know, you're like, yeah, get him in your head. And then he says that. And you just feel like, I'm the jerk.
I know. And it's so true because there's, like, a little human nature to, like, siding with Neil because people are impatient, you know? We don't want to waste our time. We don't want to feel smothered either. We don't want to constantly be annoyed, like, period, you know? But with Dell, it's like, I like that moment because I think, like you were saying, like, you're just so annoyed with him that you're not thinking about who he is so much as you're just thinking about what he's doing. And then once he says to Neil, like, you know what? Think what you want. I like me. Like, that simplicity of not just breaking down and crying or just taking it and feeling bad or apologizing for all of his behavior. Like, he sticks up for himself. And it's, like, the first moment where you really see, wow, like, these are these characters.
Yeah.
You know, Steve Martin's a straight-up tight ass, and Del Griffith is, like, who is this man?
He's not just a buffoon.
Yeah. He's got depth to him that, like, we were so not aware of. And I thought it was interesting that they do that pretty early in the movie. And it's the kind of thing they could have had that be part of the reveal in the end or, like, somewhere in the middle, you know, kind of like a midpoint. But I like that was the beginning catalyst of where this is going to go.
I read that this movie was originally 3 hours and 40 minutes.
I read that too.
Insane. I wish I could watch that version.
Right.
I wish this was like a series that's on Netflix now that we could see. Oh my gosh. They shot like tons and tons of film.
I know. And it, obviously, yeah, when you think about the differences with what we've got now and what's kind of more accepted now, I think at the time it was like, you can't make a comedy last that long. People are going to get sick of it. And like, nowadays, especially because of streaming and binging, it's like we would want more. Like, yeah, we would enjoy that.
Give me 6 hours of this story. It would be great, yeah. Right? It would be great.
Oh my god, totally.
Every episode they'd be like in a different city. Like
shitty town.
Going the wrong way, like something crazy would happen.
Totally. As if the movie itself is not enough, like honestly could watch more. They're so funny and their chemistry is so great.
Perfect.
I want to watch it all the time.
I also read that John Candy and Steve Martin said that this both was their favorite film they've ever made.
You know what? I think it shows. Right? Yeah, because I always, and this is again one of those things you notice more and more as you get older and you like really notice actors' performances. And you just, as you get older, you experience life more. So you tend to kind of learn how to relate in some ways and not. But I do love watching both of them and how they interact and just how their characters sort of change each other. I mean, it's a perfect dual protagonist story. Like,
The straight man.
Yeah.
And the goofball.
It's just total straight absurd. And it just works so well because it's so simple. But their acting just brings out the complexities of all their feelings and stuff. But I do think, like, Steve Martin and John Candy are, like, so incredibly talented. And I honestly, like, this is one of, and I love Uncle Buck.
Yes, same.
So much. But when I see this, like, sometimes you just see the pure talent. It's just, like, you're both so fucking good.
Yeah, and I think, too, because it's two of them, it's not just, like, Uncle Buck was mainly, right. You know, about Uncle Buck. Mm-hmm. So they can, like, play off of each other.
Yeah. It's just awesome.
If they were okay with filming that much, like, film,
mm-hmm.
they had to have been loving it.
Oh, my God.
No actor would want to spend that much time filming. They said it was an insane amount.
Yeah. And when they talk about, like, there was a lot that I read about how difficult it actually was to film because some of the places they would plan to film, they'd be waiting for the snow.
Snow, yeah.
Because they want, you know, you want it to be authentic. And also, that's just a huge part of, you know, the season and the time of the story. And they wouldn't get it depending on the place. They'd have to change locations completely. I mean, it was kind of a huge drag and difficulty, but obviously if they...
Huge payoff.
Yeah, they loved it.
I love the crossovers in this movie with other John Hughes movies.
Totally.
I mean, first off, you see Ferris Bueller's dad in the office. You'll never make the six.
Yeah.
Short part, but great.
So good. But that's what you love about a John Hughes movie. Every role is a big role. There's no small actors. There's no small roles. Like, you want to quote everyone.
It's true. It's perfect. Could you imagine if we were, like, little kids in that movie? Yeah. I mean, I would have been one, but it would have been amazing.
I would have not been born, so it would have been hard for me to show up, but.
Such a great cameo is the Kevin Bacon.
Oh, I know. Scene. I was like, oh, it's a baby.
So apparently,
so little.
She's having a baby, hadn't come out yet, but they put him in there, and then they also put a scene where it's on the TV. Yeah. She's having a baby.
Yeah.
So it's so crazy. Like, people didn't know what was on the TV.
They're like, well, we have this in stock and we have, you know.
Yeah. We don't have to pay rights. Yeah. We don't have to pay royalties or anything. Let's just put our own film in.
Yeah. I love it. Oh, my God. It's kind of interesting.
Kevin Bacon running through New York City chasing. I was like,
oh, my God. It's Kevin Bacon. It's a baby.
It's so great.
And he's, like, got that evil little smirk on his face. Like, he's so evil. I love it.
That segment of him running through New York City and then getting a cab and trying to, or, well, first trying to buy it off of the lawyer. And it so just funny. Made me, it just put in my little baby soul to, like, hate attorneys and lawyers or just think that they're, like, the worst.
Yeah. Well, because like, he's, like, the cliche, you know. He's like, oh, I'm, like, super selfish. I don't care about what's right or what's wrong. I'm just an attorney.
Like. And then if you notice that right after Del steals it, that man puts his hand out and gets a cab.
Yeah.
No problem. Why and is Neil, like, if he's just patient.
Yeah.
Like, he would just get.
And that's the lesson for his character is, like, be easygoing if you can be more patient. Like, shit might work out for you.
That could not be more true because if you think about if he didn't get kind of sidetracked by Del, mm-hmm. if he probably would have just waited for his flight, maybe it would have been overnight, but he probably could have gotten on a plane.
Yeah.
Or driven from New York. Mm-hmm. I know that's a long drive, but it wouldn't have taken 4 hours. Like, he just never kind of took stock of the situation and said, like, what would be the best way to get home?
Yeah.
He's just, like, chasing the tail end of a nightmare.
Yeah, exactly. And consistently trying to just go for, like, the convenient thing that's never available.
Yes, and it's just like quickest way.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it just made it 4 days longer. Yeah. Than it
should have been. It's like, when are you going home, buddy?
There's a great little, like, Easter egg when they're at the airport and Ben Stein is letting everyone know that all flights have been canceled. In the back, it says destination, and they've slid in a pre-printed.
Oh my God.
Why would they have that? Why would they? Just this destination, oh my God. Nowhere.
Just so, like, you're not going anywhere.
How ridiculous.
So silly. I love that. And he was from Ferris Bueller, too.
Yes.
Like, I love those little moments. You get to see familiar faces.
And then on the plane, Neil is sitting in between Del and the old guy in Home Alone.
With the wife and
yeah, so the dangly
ones. She's got plenty at home. Lots of dangly ones.
I don't even think he has any lines in this movie, but he has, like, one of those really deep, like, grandpa coughs.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds like it's a dead person, like, with all the air leaving their body. It's just so insane. And, of course, Neil is, like, smack down in the middle between.
Oh, my God. And they're both, like, putting their head on his shoulder. Like, it's kind of cute if it weren't so obnoxious.
This is one of my, like, favorite parts. They're in the airport, and they're trying to Neil is trying to figure out how he knows. This is
my favorite part of the whole movie.
Del. And he looks at him. And I don't know if this is just, like, the genius of John Hughes.
It is. It is.
But they put the taxi door in the airport. They didn't go back to the scene. Like, let's remind the viewer.
Just cut away. They were like, we could have cut away. So, like, I remember him in the cab, and we remember him, too. No.
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 Let's have the background of the airport. And then, but we're going to put him in the hat and parka, so you really get it.
Yeah.
And he's going to do that. Shocked
face.
That you make when, like, someone is opening the bathroom door and you're opening it at the same time and you both go. It's already great the first time when they're in New York and it's a taxi cab, but they do it again at the airport just to, like, a second punch kill.
So it's a perfect topper. It's beyond hilarious. Because it's like, not only is it just straight up extra effort, they went out of their way to do this different thing, but to almost fully assimilate the same exact thing.
It is. It's like they didn't need to do it.
He's there at the airport looking at him, so it makes sense. His imagination would, like, fill in certain blanks, but not all of them. Like, he couldn't have a photographic memory. He just had to, like, slightly remember. Like, I just thought just that one shot. I mean, it says a lot about John Hughes.
It's amazing.
Filmmaking. Like, it's beyond.
Well, actually, when I was a kid, and this is kind of weird, I would notice when they would do weird shots and like he would look at his plane ticket and they would highlight 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. Like it was a weird 80s like editing move where they don't do that anymore.
No.
Where they really like make a point of something. Like
showing you something.
And so I, as a kid, kind of thought that that's what they were doing. Like we don't understand. Uh-huh. And then as I got older and watched it, I was like, this is the funniest.
They have the whole door. So silly. Yeah. They just placed it in front of him, made him make that face. It's just, and it's still at the same angle, like eyeline angle that Steve Martin's staring at him. It's not like the angle above in the original shot where he stared down at him in the car going, who's this guy stealing my cab? Like, it's the same angle in which he's looking at him now going, I'm wondering, and we're trying to figure out how I know this person.
And he makes that face right after they show it, and he's like, mm-hmm, yeah, he's I know this guy. He stole my cab. That's
the guy. The part where their car is basically, like, going between the two trucks.
Which, that's completely illegal for two semis to just same...
Yeah, same pace. Same, like, parallel driving.
So dangerous.
Like, so crazy. And yet they are facing them, like, going, like, between them, scraping their car. And, like, the two shots where they're both skeletons.
Yeah.
I just lose it. I think because as a kid, I watched Home Alone 2.
Yeah.
And 1, of course.
But electricity.
When Marv gets shocked, like, I laugh like a crazy person. I can't not laugh my ass off. And so I have to do it at that point, too, because it's just pure hilarity. Oh, my God. And then when he's the devil, when he looks over and he just looks like this cackling devil, like, ah, ha, ha. Like, oh, my God. It's like those silly touches that you don't expect. And they're there, and it just makes you giggle.
They're great.
I love it. So good. So good.
So, like I said earlier, a lot of times quotes from this movie just, like, happen in my head. I just hear them. Sometimes it's just, like, a file cabinet, and it's just as something's happening, I hear it. When someone makes a dumb mistake that I have kind of one-upped them on, like, yeah, you should have done that, but I don't say that. Uh-huh. I hear in my head, you called home. I called the Braidwood Inn. In my head, it's so messed up. But that's like the attitude I have.
It's just like the most...
I feel like I'm giving a little too much about my personal.
No, I love it.
But this is true.
I'm really getting to know you.
This isn't even... That's not the last of it. Like, there's more things like this.
Yes. Oh my God, yes. Lay it on me.
What's so great? So they take that horrible taxi ride to the Braidwood.
You called home. I called the Braidwood. Now I'm always going to think of that. Thank God. You are a treasure.
So they take this horrible taxi filled with naked ladies.
So fucking gross.
Chi-chi balls.
Yeah.
There's like lights in it.
Like
dice.
If you think of like trashy tacky everything, this car's got it. Like, he knows
the driver by first name, so you have to know he knew his number. Like, he has his business card in his pocket.
Well, he probably sold him shower curtain rings
yeah, for his personal use.
He knows the level of dirty.
They take the side roads in the middle of the night, so the cab fare is, like, super high, which I didn't understand as a kid either. I'm like, why did he go the long way?
Yeah. You know,
they pull up to the Braidwood Inn. There's, like, a little scuffle between a motorcycle couple.
Yeah.
Neil's face is just, like...
Just, you know, the perfect atmosphere.
Like, oh, God. And Del looks at him and he goes, stick with me.
Like, we're in a bad neighborhood, but I got you. No worries.
Also, where is he going to go?
Yeah, you're pretty much stuck there. It's not going to get any better than this.
We have a slew of mishaps happen. Yes. It's like too hard to count.
But subtle, you know?
You have, you know, the bathroom destroyed.
Yeah.
He's left a washcloth to dry himself.
It's so
Del
yucky.
Is drinking beer on the vibrating bed, which explodes. They don't show it, but it explodes. So he's sleeping in a puddle of beer. They so have gross. Their big fight. They go to sleep. And then Del starts scratching.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I never noticed this, but when he's doing all his nasal noises and stuff, he does shave in a haircut two bits.
Oh, like the dun, 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 the tune? Dun, 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 dun.
He does it. And it's very subtle, oh but if you God. If you go back and watch it, it's like.
I can hear it.
And then when he does the two bits, that's when Steve loses it.
Yeah.
And he's gets
like,
up
are you like doing this on purpose because, to annoy me?
Yeah, shaving hair. That's obviously that's the annoying knock you do. You know, you're being annoyed.
That's so funny.
And then that triggers the
ultimate scene.
Great scene.
Acting gold. Pure Oscar worthy acting gold, everyone. So good. Can't get over it. And the music, the music choices are such a, like.
They're perfect.
They're moody. And I love that because it's not as expected. It's like you think it's a comedy. We're going to get some silliness or we're going to get moments of sentimentality. But this was like, there was a heaviness or like a depth, I should say.
They really trigger feelings.
Yeah. Like, that's why I cry. I got to be honest. I mean, I know the acting moves me. I would cry anyway. But I think just like. When you combine that with these really good music choices, I'm like, oh, you got me.
Yeah. Like, that is a really moving moment, too. Yeah. And then they just have to, like, suck it up and go to bed. And
because, like, Neil's, like, packing up like he's going to leave. And then he realizes, where the fuck else? Where am I going to go?
Yeah, I'm in Wichita alone with this guy. Yeah. But I have a hotel room.
And at that point, you know, it's so late that he probably just thinks, like, I'm done. Like, I've lost the day. Like, there's no way I'm going to do anything else. Like, so sad. Ugh.
So, in the night, they get robbed.
Oh, I know.
Someone comes in the room.
And that kind of creeped me out because we didn't know. Like, this is obviously someone we never saw before and never see again. And you don't see the face of the man coming into the room. There's something creepy about how, like...
Someone's in the room.
Someone's just in the room.
Yeah, that is really freaky.
And, like, you see the key. Like, I think you see his hands turning the key or
I think he
something.
Puts a knife in the keyhole. Yeah,
that's... You're right. It's he picks the lock.
Scary.
And it's just like, okay, and something's going on, but it's one of those... It's just an imagery, like, kind of messing with your head a little bit. But it really freaked me out as a kid. I was like, who is that man? And you never see him again. It's like, until they say, like, we were robbed. It's like, I really understood, like, okay.
I know. I didn't know what was happening either when I was younger. And then you see them at breakfast trying to pay. And for a while as a kid, I thought that Dell did steal. And two, because... I remembered later, there's a whole situation. Mm-hmm. If you notice, when they are buying or paying for the room, the cards get mixed up.
Yes.
And they kind of zoom in on the diner's club.
One of those subtle things. That's very like John Hughes subtlety.
You have to kind of notice that the cards get swapped. Mm-hmm. But it's a quick diner's club.
Yeah. I read, speaking of that subtlety, I read that there's, going back to the beginning where he... tries to get the cab and obviously Dell steals the cab without knowing.
Yeah.
When he drives off and he looks down in the puddle,
there's sharks. I read that too.
Precious. It's like I this had to, trail. Like
it's so hard to see. I had to go back and pause it and I kept missing it. It's like so little and it looks like there might be two of them.
Yeah.
There's like there's one in the puddle that's like pink and then there's one kind of in like the top right corner. It's just like, this guy's a mess.
Yeah.
Like, he's just leaving his inventory all over town. These are probably his only samples to show people. Yeah. And he's just, like, trailing.
So sad.
It's that trunk.
Yeah. And that's another, like, funny little, you know.
That trunk is almost a character in itself.
Yeah. They gave him this clumsy, very, like, cumbersome trunk to carry around. It just adds to the difficulty that is Del Griffith.
Which is hard to kind of believe that he's... a soul traveler with like such a huge trunk on his own.
Right. And then I like thinking back when you know in the ending, you know, what that he's homeless, it's like, oh, that's probably everything
he has.
That's all he has. Like, that's sad. So then you realize you keep thinking this trunk is too big, and then you realize it's his very whole. Small. Nina. I had to.
Oh.
I know. Precious man. He was precious.
It's such a good shot when it's morning and they start to show just the mess on the nightstand.
All on Del's side.
There's cigarettes.
Chiclets,
Cracker Jacks in the bed also. And just like beer, and it's just a mess. It's a
hot mess.
And then it pans, you know, over to him kissing his ear.
And his picture of his wife, which is so cute. Marie.
Marie.
We love you, Marie.
You know what I always feel like she reminds me of is Buzz's girlfriend. It, like, if that was her mom. Because, like, it's the same kind of shot.
It's the same gold and it's this, like, brassy kind frame.
Kind of, like, startled look almost. Buzz, your Buzz, girlfriend. Your girlfriend.
I hope Buzz's girlfriend blossomed into
a Marie. She did.
She Shiva'd into a Marie.
Oh. Shiva. One.
I hope she did.
What I love too when they're, you know, brushing it off and saying the Bears game or whatever, you see how tiny the bed actually is. Because I don't think I really noticed it when they first show the room, but when they pan up, it's literally like a full size bed.
Yeah,
it's not even a queen. It's so small. Tiny. And if you just look at John Candy and like two grown men sleeping in this teeny tiny bed. It's just so funny.
It's so good. Oh my God.
I don't even think it's two twins put together. It's that little.
It's so, yeah, it's very tight. I love when they say, because they said something like, did you see the Bears game last week? Like trying to act manly. But I guess, oddly enough, the timing of the movie, it came out. Like,
were they
Thanksgiving
doing
1987, so a week prior to, like, the release.
Uh-huh.
So if you were sitting in the movie, seeing it the day it came out, it would make sense because the Bears did do well in the previous game last week.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's just perfect timing. I don't know. I thought that was so...
That's great.
Random trivia. I thought it was cool.
So the next part, after they go have breakfast, they realize they're robbed. They need a ride. They call in Gus to... ask his brother, or no, his son.
Greatest, like, character actor. And I mean, there's a million great character actors, and Edie McClurg is kind of my boo, but
Oh
my God, Dylan Baker. Just.
I've always been disgusted by this scene. This is my mom's favorite scene. She thinks it's so funny when he does the nostril grunt.
That, like, weird, like.
What is he doing?
He doesn't get it all the way. It's just like stuck. Ugh. It's stuck there.
And he shakes Del's hand, which he calls him, are you the shower curtain fella?
Yeah.
Which is great. And then he spits, wipes his mouth from the spit, and then shakes Neil's hand.
And you know what was like chewing tobacco too?
It
was like
brown, it was spit.
It was like a nasty.
Chew.
Yeah.
Ugh. That is my nightmare. Oh. I already hate shaking people's hands.
Yeah.
I have to do it at work all the time.
Oh yeah.
I literally run to the bathroom immediately and start washing them.
And I read that Steve Martin was a germaphobe.
Oh.
And so John Hughes he told him to do that to get the reaction.
It's the worst.
But everything else that Dylan Baker did was like improv.
Really?
Like, that was mostly all him. And then the gal who played his wife, she was having a hard time, like, keeping a straight face
because she was amazing.
So funny. And she was amazing.
She was amazing. Wait,
yeah. And it's so funny because when she steps out, like, at first you are like, oh my God, poor baby. Like, this life. You can see this
so
life from the
afraid
outside.
Of her.
Yeah, but then, like, yeah, she gets that tough look and she slams the door.
She slams the door. And then he says the most shocking thing that, as a child, I just could not fathom. Her first baby came out sideways and she didn't scream or nothing. What? How is that possible?
I'm still laughing so hard.
Sideways.
What does that mean?
What does it come? That's not how babies work. That's not how women's bodies work.
So she's small and skinny. She's strong.
She's strong. God. I mean, I wish he was in more of the movie. I just was so disgusted by the chew.
Yeah.
It's just too much. And the
see, if this were a series, like, you'd see him again.
You would see him again.
You know what I mean? Like,
for sure.
And I was actually surprised that there weren't some, and maybe in the 3-hour version,
there were
some people that we see again because of it being Thanksgiving. Surely there were other people traveling from Chicago or from New York to Chicago. So it would be so interesting to see, like, what other people they would come by again. So again, would love for this to be a mini series or something, but, you know.
Well, and they have a post-credit scene. He would have been a good post-credit scene. Have you? Yes. Did you see it?
No.
So there's a very subtle post-credit screen that goes or scene that goes all the way back.
Like a Ferris Bueller moment.
Yes, but it's very. It's just real quick, and it's the boss that's when they're in New York looking at the marketing material.
Uh-huh.
He's still sitting there, but his Thanksgiving meal is on the conference table, and he still is not decided.
He's just looking at them, same two styles again.
Usually when I look at these movies that we cover, I kind of ask myself, what makes it like a holiday film?
Mm-hmm.
And like what makes this a holiday film, and usually the three general things that I've noticed I look for is, one, if the holiday is a backdrop in the story, or two, the holiday being a backdrop in the story also plays a role in the mm-hmm. story, or three, just like the overall atmosphere. That's where it becomes very subjective, I guess, because like to me, for example, there are certain movies that I'm like, oh, I love watching this at Halloween, but it has nothing to technically do with Halloween.
Yeah.
And some people...
I hear a lot of people watch The Wizard of Oz on Christmas Day or Charlie and the Chocolate... Or, well, Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
And I never got that. It's because not a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
But it's like the feeling people watch it.
And it's funny because it's about like the atmosphere. It's mm-hmm. like candy is this playful thing and treats are... like indulgence yes. and a delight and all that. So it can see those parallels. I have certain like scary movies I love at Halloween that I'm like, that has nothing to do with Halloween. Where did I like...
It's just scary adopt? And you're watching it.
Yeah, yeah. And so for me, this movie has like all of that. So it's like, it's atmospheric in that, you know, it's... They're facing the snow. They're facing the difficult weather.
The travel, which is always insane.
Oh, I know. That couldn't be more holiday related. Just the, like, having to deal with snow country, like, having to face the roughness of the Midwest, and it's, like, the vastness of America, you know?
Yeah.
It
kind
of gives it, like, an Americana feel just for that alone. And obviously, Thanksgiving is, like, purely an American thing, so I feel like it kind of relates a little bit. And then, obviously, just, you know... Their goal is just to get home for the holiday.
Thanksgiving, yeah.
So I think it's, and obviously other people are too.
So it's heavy travel mm-hmm. or heavy traffic. Everyone bustling. Is rushing and stressed out.
Yeah. Nothing is working out at all because of all the crowds and all the difficulties. Like,
It is a mess.
Yeah.
I mean, even here, it can get pretty crazy around the holidays, driving and
mm-hmm.
the shoppers.
I read this is a random quote, Rolling Stone article, basically just highlights like why this is such the ultimate Thanksgiving movie.
Yeah.
The quote is, if there's a Thanksgiving feast involved in a film's plot, chances are good that it's there to heighten the story's conflict, expose secrets, and or allow somebody to drop some kind of bombshell. Cue someone slamming their silverware onto the table and storming out of the dining room. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is the opposite of all that. The whole movie is about Neil getting home so he can enjoy the day with his family. That's it. That's the goal.
Aww.
Which I think is so simple and sweet, because how many at least like Christmas movies can you think of where everyone's like obligated to go deal with being with their family? They don't want to face where they come from or their past or the people they come from. And like,
or like that horrible dinner scene in Christmas Vacation with right? the burnt turkey. And no one is speaking.
It's and there's so uncomfortable.
Yes. And the in-laws are saying negative things. And yeah. Cousin Eddie is there.
And their dog that, like, eats whatever.
Yes. And
like,
no one can comment that there's cat food in the Jell-O. Yeah. Like, it's just, it's horrible.
It's this constant, like, buttoned up, like, pent up resentment that explodes. And I do think, as funny as that is, this is a very different thing. This is, I want to get home to my family. That's all I care about.
Aww.
I did find, and this is like a random theory, I shouldn't even say theory, but like a thought.
Uh-huh.
Just a thought. And as an adult watching this, I kind of just wonder these random things. And you can tell me, like, I'm straight up probably wrong and reading way too much into this. He goes, you called home and I called the Brayward Inn.
Yes.
He says something to him like trouble on the home front.
Uh-huh.
And I always got the feeling there was possibly like little issues in his marriage and something about having him get home played into that. Like, I felt, and he says later, Neil says to him, you know, I've been spending too much time away from home. And that's when Dahl says, you know, I haven't been home in years. And it's like that later comes up. But just like, and when they get home, like the look that his wife gives him is so, I think also just they were going for this really heavy mood with the music and everything. But she just looks at him like she couldn't believe it that he was there.
Yeah. Well, I think that this kind of is that thing in the 80s and 90s, and I mean, it still probably happens to this day, but the traveling salesman, they're gone a lot.
Yeah.
If he's traveling for work, she probably just wants him home.
Yeah.
And you know the stigma of the traveling salesman that, like, cheats or they party. There's, like, a lot of, like, drugs.
And so there could be all this insecurity or, or worry.
Or she probably just feels like she needs more help at home. Like, he's gone for 4 or 5 days.
Three little kids.
Three like little, yeah. Ones. And like, she's putting on this whole Thanksgiving meal with the in-laws.
By herself.
Yeah, like, they never get into that. But as a woman, that probably seems like so much.
Completely. I always thought that that was interesting, and I kind of felt like him being home meant more than just seeing everyone and just being there for the turkey. I really felt like there had to be some like layer to that.
Well, it seems like it's happened a lot because there's that scene where he calls home and the first call and the little girl goes delayed.
Yeah.
Like, it's happened before. Yeah. She's picking up on it.
A little girl who's very young to, like, be understanding of, you know, transportation and travel.
This isn't the first time that this has happened. Mm-hmm. So she's disappointed. The mom's disappointed.
It just, to me, makes a little bit of sense.
That was the tone at the time.
Yeah. I thought, too, because she said something like, well, I'll wait up for you. But they don't cut to her, like...
I guess she's asleep watching a movie.
Yeah, I would have thought that, like, maybe she, like, put the TV on to try to stay awake. But I guess asleep. I would have, like, as a director, been like, okay, I would cut to you. If you were waiting up for him, you'd be on the couch.
Yeah.
Like, with a blanket and a throw and not, like, in bed, you know?
It's, like, kind of more sad that she's in bed. Like, she gave up. He's not coming home. I think that's when she's watching She's Having a Baby. I think that's what's playing.
And that's the audio. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, when you think about it, and it didn't seem like she was worried, like, is he safe and he's going to come home safe? It's more like, what's he doing? Like, why can't he really come home? Is it really all these things he's telling me? Like, and there was no way to look that up and see, like, how delayed is his flight? You know, like.
Yeah, you can't go online and see.
Yeah, you can't, like, check in and shit like that. You know, now you could. But, yeah, I just always felt like there were. There were, like, layers to that. It was just depth.
Good point. After they get a ride from Owen.
Greatest.
They get to the train. And Neil very quickly, as fast as he can, brushes Dahl off.
Yeah.
I don't want to sit with you.
Yeah.
I'm going to sleep. He feels so relieved.
Yeah.
And...
talks to this random little teenage girl who has nothing in fucking common with just because he's so relieved.
I'm going home for Thanksgiving just in time.
It's like, okay.
And you hear.
It's like on the train. Just kidding.
They were on the train for a very short time.
Yeah.
Long enough to get really far away from a highway. I think they have to walk like a mile and a half.
Yeah. Oh, my God. They were all in the snow. It was sad.
That was so scary to me. Because I always lived so close to the ocean and so close to freeways that it's always, I can get home. No. I know how to get home wherever I'm at.
Yeah.
Just get me to the 5 or the 405, I will get home.
That's a real thing but for they people were in totally
different
out places.
In the middle of Stubville and was like a mile and a half. I know that's not that far to walk, but think about there are people that probably couldn't have walked that far.
I know.
Yeah. Someone that's handicapped or older. I mean, that's hard. How horrible for a train to start smoking. I don't know what happened on the train.
They were just like, he goes, did you see smoke?
You just hear the dun, dun, dun.
It's like,
so sad. I love Neil's face when you see Dahl struggling with his huge trunk. And he just makes this look like, damn it. Like, I have to help this person. How am I still stuck with this guy?
And that's an interesting point because... he could have still had the opportunity to just walk away, but he went out of his way, reluctant, to go help him and be with him again.
And Del even looks back at him like, are you going to help me?
Yeah. He has such cute, like, manipulative little moments like that. Like
these puppy dogs.
In an endearing way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like when he gives him that speech in the hotel room and then he lays down and he like faces the other way, but then he like looks back at one point real quick and then looks like goes back.
Yeah, or later when...
I wanted to see if that worked.
When they have the thing with the cars and his stuff's all over the road and he's like, well, I might as well go get my stuff. He's like, oh, my back.
Yeah. It's like, all right, we get it.
Like, I need help.
Yeah, it's like, we get it.
Poor Neil, he thinks that he's shaken this guy and now they're it's off the not, train.
Yeah, it ain't a happening.
And they go to a bus.
Is this okay? So it cuts straight to the bus, right?
Basically, like they're walking, mm-hmm. and
because there's at one point when are they at the station where they're sitting next
yes,
to
yes, that's
man?
What I was gonna bring up. So, yes, that's exactly what I was gonna say.
He looks like a prospector,
he looks like
with mice on his
mice,
knees.
And they're running around on his knee, and no one else is like
concerned for this man
or even just addressing that there's mice running around next to him. Yeah, Del says something. They're at the bus. It cuts to them at the bus station, and Del says, so have you ever traveled by bus?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of makes a point, like, it's worse than the train. Or, like, you're going to love this, you know, kind of warning him. And you just see this man that was probably from the 1800s, the gold rush.
Literally looks like he was at Fort Sumner.
Doesn't
like
look alive.
Gold, created the gold rush.
And who... whose idea was it to give him two tiny mice and let him run around his legs?
He had a little box and
yes,
he chewed through
but
the box.
They chewed through the hole.
And they were on his little legs.
I think he might have been dead and his eyes are just open because he has no reaction to these mice that have chewed themselves out. And he's been sitting there long enough for them to chew out of the box.
He's been there for a long time.
He does not move whatsoever.
He doesn't. I think you might be right. Those are some good theories right there.
He was dead.
Just hanging out with this dead fellow.
It's just saying the bus people and the bus, it's just, you're going to get a whole...
It's a whole different crowd.
I saw a deleted scene where they're on the plane and they're eating plane food.
Yes.
And Del is just full mouth of food talking, you know, with his mouth open. And he says something like, I always order a special meal. And he has it down, like, per airline, what to order.
Uh-huh.
And his first choice is, you know, on such and such plane, I always order the fish salad.
No, what is a fish salad?
What is the fish salad?
So you mean, like, tuna salad? Like a tuna?
If so, that is the worst thing to order on a plane.
Worst thing to call it.
It has to smell horrid.
I would be surprised if any airline ever even offered
in
fish.
The 80s, probably. Well, remember on Airplane?
Oh, yeah.
Everyone gets sick from the fish.
Yeah.
And that woman
That's all the more reason to not serve fish on an airplane.
That flight attendant does my favorite bit where someone says, oh, my husband, he had the fish, and she bites her hand. Like, as she walks away, like, she does it like,
Yeah. Oh my
it's
God.
So good.
Oh boy.
So they're on the bus. They start singing.
I love that. I love that moment because again, it's one of those things where it's like they're having a great time and Del is like leading. Like he's having the best time singing with everyone. And then when Neil tries to sing something, no one knows what the fuck song he's trying
this
to sing.
This is another quote in my head that will happen when someone embarrasses themselves in a certain way. I literally will hear three coins in a fountain.
Yeah.
When someone does something like where they just fail and it's very obvious. I to this day still have never heard that song.
You just look at them and go, Flintstones, meet the Flintstones.
And he kills it. The whole bus joins in.
I know. Oh my God.
They love it.
And that's all the more reason, like, it's one of those straight absurd things where it's even more absurd when the absurd person becomes the accepted, the liked, the favored. It's that what about Bob syndrome, you know? It's like everyone likes this person that everyone thinks is, you know, like so great and you're the only one feeling like this person's insane. Why? Is it just me? It's just me? Really?
That's a great movie. I think they go to the airport and that's where he gets the car.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no flights, I guess.
Yes.
But they're selling the shower curtain rings so as good. Earrings.
Yeah.
Which, when I think back about it now, that would never fit.
That would never fit in your ear. I mean, it's too big.
It's way huge. Way
too big. Yeah.
It's huge.
You can see it when he's holding them. You can see the clasp. It's enormous.
It's like. Crazy because I've seen those old shower curtain rings. No one uses them anymore. They have like a huge hold.
Yeah. No, you'd have to have your ears like stretched out like those people that do that.
He makes $100. That was amazing. And then it's like the saddest. They're having lunch and he's so proud of himself. He's like, my brilliant idea, da da da. And
he should be because like he just made bank on like, I mean, technically it was scamming, but it was still a great job. He's a good salesman.
They're desperate.
That's his nature. Yeah. And they're desperate. And you know what? Those girls were happy. They got earrings. So, you know.
He does deliver a great line right there when Neil realizes his family's at the Thanksgiving pageant.
Yeah.
Adele goes.
Oh, those are the good days.
They don't come back again.
Yeah. The way he looks at it when he says it is like, you fucked up.
Could you not say the worst thing right now? Like, yeah. I'm missing my only daughter's Thanksgiving pageant.
They don't come back again. They don't. So sad.
And he's so...
And I like that they cut away to it. I like that we got to see that little moment. And it's like, is it... She's grateful he's coming home. Is that, like, all his imagination? Or is that, like, what happened?
Maybe. Because
it could have been. It's just cute.
It's cute either way.
Yeah. She's adorable.
It's sad that he missed that. And, you know, that wasn't the time of iPhones. And who knows if it probably wasn't recorded. 1987. Yeah. They would have had, like...
The bulky...
Yeah, a boombox size video camera. So good. I always laugh when he goes to get the car and the bus driver, who sounds like he's only been smoking since he was 5 years old, is like, go down the aisle, the V5. I can't even do it, but it's like, what did he just say? Yeah. Who hired this man? You can barely tell what he's saying. It sounds like there's 3 cigarettes in his mouth at the time.
The moment in which he says that. It's so extreme. But it was the 80s. Everybody smoked.
That's true.
Like, may as well have been the 60s.
I do remember every restaurant was like, smoking or not smoking.
Yeah.
And just there was like a haze. I'm not kidding. I wasn't trying to be funny. There was like a haze, like a cloud in every room. Like
it's
every.
True.
I've shown.
That's why the movies look like that. They used to smoke out a room. Cinematographers would smoke out the room. They can get that light reflecting in from the windows so you can really see it.
Uh-huh.
And they probably didn't have to work that hard because everyone smoked.
But it was like that back then. Yeah. Even like the pollution back then, my cousins who are like teenagers now, they, one of them had never heard of a smog check. And she was like, what's smog? And I was trying to explain pollution and all this. And I showed her a photo of LA from the 90s and then a photo today. I mean, it's night and day.
Oh, wow.
They cleaned it up.
Good.
But probably a lot of it was smoking and then the car emissions.
Just
and
constant shit in the air all the time.
We were breathing in...
Our generation.
Toxins.
Our generation. This is so screwed over.
So this poor bus driver, you never see what he looks like.
You just hear that great VO.
V5. That is the biggest car lot I've ever seen. He goes to the one that's missing.
It's depressingly large.
Well, think about it's letter V.
Yeah.
So that's way down the line. And he's like, oh, they don't have any work cars. There were so many cars there.
I was like, you could get a car. I don't understand. You're in V.
It's just because he blew up on our girl.
My boo, Edie McClurg. Oh my God, there are not words. There aren't words. She's perfection.
She has the best voice.
Oh my God.
Ever. And
she's pure.
Just.
She's who I strive to be. I love her so much.
I wish she had a bigger part in this movie.
Again, like a miniseries.
I mean, Ferris Bueller.
Dweebies, dickheads, sluts. They all adore him. They think he's a righteous dude.
That voice is what I heard for 4 years in Minnesota. So there's this like special
good.
Like affection I have for it.
Yeah.
She's from Wisconsin. It's pretty similar, you know, to the Californian ear.
I was just,
you know I can't cook.
Yeah. How does she bring say? Me ambrosia salad.
Yeah.
He's allowed to bring the marshmallows.
Gobble, gobble.
Gobble, gobble.
And it's like, why is she on the phone with clearly like a cousin or her friend or somebody sister. She's going to have like for Thanksgiving? And it's like, there's a line of people. Like, I still love her customer service tactics, but still, there's a line of people. You gotta help them out.
And she's having a full-on conversation.
Yeah.
This really is a sign of the times of no email because, like, my family, we had our Thanksgiving plans all dished out on email. Mm-hmm. Who's bringing what?
Yeah.
I can't cook, I'll bring the ambrosia salad.
Day before Thanksgiving at work in uniform behind the desk, lying in front of her. And she's going to have the conversation of who's bringing ambrosia salad.
You know what I love, too, is she does one of her head scratches.
Yes.
Like she does so much in Ferris Bueller.
Oh, my God.
And she pulls out Jeannie pencils. When Jeannie
comes out, and she's like, what a little asshole. Anyway.
There's that. Okay, so he goes to V5. There is it's 1 million good. Cars in that Everywhere. Lot. And there's one missing V5.
So funny.
And you see the bus drive away.
And then what do you do? What do you do when that happens? Because there's no cell phones.
Yeah, he just has to walk back.
There's no phone over there to page or call anyone to, like, come and get him out in the stranded.
So I don't know why he had to go down the side of, like, an overpass. Yeah. Which, that has happened to me in that exact same scenario. I mean, not that I was missing a car, but I got dropped off by a bus.
Uh-huh.
And I was trying to get to probably a Target. And Worth there was it. No way down. Oh, than to walk in the snow. And all I could think of was, if Neil Page did this, I could do this. And I did not say 18 F words at the lady when I got there.
Good, 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 good.
But that is what makes our movie rated R.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That scene is
18
just perfect.
F words in a row. I read that was one of the reasons why Steve Martin wanted to do the film.
Oh, yeah.
He read that part of the script and the part when they're in the car, and I think it's when Dell's messing with the seat.
Yes.
You know, and it's like,
he just like, he couldn't. He was like, I have to do this movie.
Yeah.
I have to
that sold him on that.
It goes on for so long, and all she says is to him back is just, well, you're fucked. Like, just that's
Give
it.
Give him a taste of his own medicine.
Yeah. And then it's great because, like, what can you do? Like, what's he going to do?
Yeah. Like, it is the perfect, she shut him down.
Yeah.
And again, when Neil thinks, He's has finally rid of Del. You know what's so Never. Funny is if you see Del coming, like after he gets punched in the face, you see Del like skirting out of there, which just makes you think like he stole that car, but I'm never sure. I mean, I think it's Neil's car.
He steals the credit card. Well, he didn't steal it. I guess he...
Yeah, the diner's card got swapped.
Got swapped, and he thought later, he thought, well, maybe he put it in here by mistake, or he gave it to
me. Yeah, and he was going to give it back.
Yeah, and so he used it, because obviously in the moment, he had nothing, so he used it.
Yeah, but I always wonder if that's the car that was in V5, and he was like, oh, it's under Neil Page.
Mm.
But then there would have been two sets of keys, so right. I don't know. I always wonder that, because why was his car missing, and then why did Del get a car?
Things that would have been more explained, maybe, with the full version.
3 hours and 40 minutes.
3 hours would have told us.
Yeah, that would have been very
That would make sense why he would show up and there's no car, but then they don't explain the keys.
He's racing out like a maniac, and then brakes when Neil's on the ground.
Yeah.
And he makes that guy... Pick him up.
God, that guy is so mean.
By the testicles.
I can't even, like, and then the rest of the way he's like speaking so high pitched.
Like he sucked a bunch of helium.
Yeah.
He probably did.
Yeah. That's how he sounded. Poor guy.
Del says something like, I've never seen a man get picked up by his testicles before. This is one of my favorite segments where, you know, you see him fidget. Del fidgets with the seat. They switch, and then Del's singing.
Oh, yes.
He gets his parka stuck. How dangerous was that?
I know. And he was just like, whatever, it doesn't matter. And it's like, my thing is, like, as a Californian watching this, I'm like, you're dry. There's ice. Like, there's snow. That is the scariest thing.
I would have started to pull over with my knees and slow down, or or told Neil, like, I need
grab
help.
Grab the wheel. Yeah.
This is an emergency.
He, like, didn't want to wake him up because he's so sweet. Like, no.
No. Well, he's embarrassed.
Yeah, that too. For sure. Oh, man.
One of my favorite parts of that whole segment is when Del has to slam on his brakes and he does the double foot.
Yeah.
The just hard 2 feet brakes.
Gotta use everything with all my might. I love, like, because of that, when he's doing the mess around and he's goofing off and he, like, in the parka and everything, all that leads up to him having to turn around and gets back on the freeway the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, the couple in the other car seeing them. I just love that scene because they're like, you're good. You know, the whole time they're shouting at them, you're going the wrong way. It's like, for the longest time, they do not take them seriously.
Yeah.
And Del even says, like, what are they saying? He's like, you're going the wrong way? Well, he's drunk. He doesn't know where we're going.
Yeah, he goes, how does he know where we're going?
Classic.
And then he's like, you're drunk. And he does, like, the motion.
So
yeah. It starts where he's like, Neil kind of wakes up and he's like, what's going on? He goes, this Joker wants to race.
Yes. I think you misinterpreted.
Let's go.
So good. I love when he's just like, okay, they're drunk. And Neil's just like, oh, thank you. Yeah. Like, just like humoring them. Like, whatever. Like, I don't know how he's, like, the way he says thank you, it just kills me.
I know. Thank you.
Steve Martin's is so fucking good.
That, yeah. Anytime they're in the car, I'm just loving it. I'm full attention. It's just scene after scene. Is perfect.
Pure hilarity. Just great.
Then you've got the car crash.
God, I love that. That is so iconic. It's just, and then just the whole, like, almost slapstick level conversation after they get out of the car and they're gathering their things off the side of the road and, like, Neil's, like, grabbing him by the parka, like, swishing him back and forth. Like, what do you mean my card's gone? Like, what do you mean? Like, getting the truth out of him. Oh, my God.
I love right before that when they're just, like, taking a breather because they just went through.
They're like,
horrible. And they're sitting on the bench and you hear whoosh. Yeah.
Because you see the light behind them.
Yeah, the cigarette went right back into the car. So I was cracking up when you just hear that whoosh. And then they both do like a turn and they look and it doesn't hit them right away.
They just casually look back. Don't even think about it.
And Neil starts laughing. And Del's like, what's so funny? He goes, you finally did it to yourself.
Yeah.
He's so pleased with him.
I know.
That this guy, it finally caught up with him. Mm-hmm. But in turn, it still
caught back up with
Neil. It was still Neil. Yeah. Because his wallet, which you know something's going to happen. Because when he goes, oh, I'm going to put my wallet in the glove compartment.
Don't let me forget. Like, oh, shit.
Let's foreshadow that something bad's going to happen in a minute.
Oh, totally. I love when he gets so upset and then he trips over the suitcase. Just the way he does it. So good. Classic. I do like the next scene where they go to the motel and sadly, you know, they have really nothing to offer the management. But Neil says, you know, I have a nice watch. Like, can I at least get a room? And so
$17 and a hell of a nice watch.
Yeah. And the guy's like, okay. And then he doesn't let Del get a room.
Yeah.
But I love how Del, like, still being positive, still being humorous. Like, he goes, I have a Casio. And, like, drapes it over
like
his
QVC.
Arms. Yeah. Like, total salesman till the end, to the top. Like, love him. And then that moment where, like, he goes and sits in the car that's not even a car. That's basically his outside. And he's in the snow. And he's, like, just expecting.
Talking to his wife.
Yeah, he's, like, talking to his wife. It's so sad. It's just, like, really hopeless.
Sad.
It's like, oh, I'm not going to get to see you, you know, until I get to see you. Like,
yeah.
It's like, oh, like, he's just lost all. You know, he's lost everything.
Yeah, he's like, when am I going to wake up? I finally meet someone I really enjoy, and what do? I smother him.
Yeah. I like, too, that Neil is like, you know, I've got to let him in. Like, and he didn't have to do that. Obviously, it was the smarter thing to do, so he didn't freaking freeze out there.
Yeah.
But I do think that was, like, the moment where it also kind of felt very, like, Thanksgiving. It's like we're in different worlds.
Yeah.
Different kinds of people, but let's come together for the sake of not only survival, but just being friendly.
It's very human.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they have a fun night where they're drinking. And
I love it, too, because I was watching it going, like, God, they're raiding that mini bar, and then I'm like, they don't have their credit cards on file. They could just raid it and leave. Like, who's going to care?
Yeah, back then, now they have, like, those sensors. You pick it up for too long, and you get charged.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, they're drinking, like, well, and I think, too, Dell had a lot of them in his trunk. Because they're going down line, and he's like, oh, I have this tequila from when I was in Mexico. And
all these little...
I love seeing the old Doritos bag. Yeah. You see the classic...
You know what's cute is I get the feeling, like, you know, just thinking in the world of the movie, it feels like both of them haven't had a good drink with a good friend in a long time.
Yeah.
Like, and so it was very charming and cute for them to, like, totally bond and just be goofy together.
That's true, because Neil's married with kids.
Yeah.
And Del is, you know, homeless.
All by himself.
By himself. Yeah. So, yeah, they probably haven't had that kind of moment with another friend.
So sweet.
I love when they leave and they're trying to reverse. That is such an amateur move.
Can't even drive that piece of shit car.
Like. Everyone knows in the Midwest, when you can't get out of snow, you take your... the floor mats, and you put them under your wheels, and you can drive right over the snow.
That makes perfect sense. No, that's a perfect tool.
They just reverse right back into the place. Like,
guess we're gonna destroy the motel while we're here.
And then Del looks back at, he's just, destroyed a wall, and he goes, huh.
Yeah.
Huh. And then Neil, go.
Let's go.
They get out of there. The car
is... Very cute, like, helping each other out by this point.
The car is beat to crap.
It's so sad.
They're
bundled up so much, too.
Because it's freezing.
Can you imagine? And that, like, fast, like, driving that fast.
Oh.
And it's cold.
Yeah, because you get the wind chill. Oh, I love it when they don't have, like, he has to use hand signals for it to turn.
It's like
his arms out.
I don't know why that made us laugh, too.
It's so like, good. Oh.
It's so old school.
I love it. They get pulled over.
But that's how resourceful he is. He seems like he's actually prepared for just about anything to go wrong, right? So good.
They get pulled over, and they are in such denial as to the disarray of this vehicle.
Yeah, completely.
There's the great line, the dashboard, everything's gone. But the radio still works.
He's like, oddly enough, the thing works just fine. Clear as the bell.
Clear as the bell. When Del is trying to get out of a ticket, or I should say from them, like, you know.
Getting their car.
Car impounded.
Yeah.
He says, I have to get my friend Neil here home for his Thanksgiving dinner. And the way Neil looks at the cop.
I know, like, he's like this little kid. Like,
his little That's like, me. I'm Neil and
That's
I need
me,
to get
I'm Neil.
He's in that big hat. They're so bundled up. It is so funny.
By that point, it's like they are a team. They are not at odds with each other. They're totally like one now. Like same goal. They're working together. It's so darn funny. Just so cute.
Gotta get my friend Neil here.
I love when they, so after their car is impounded, they somehow just hook it up with a truck driver.
And I think it's from someone he knows through the shower curtain rings.
Yeah. Thank God he knows everybody. And
no, it's such a network.
I don't know why, but I just love that on the side of the bus. Like, is it pies or something? It's Ashkenazen. I don't know what it is.
I thought it was milk or something.
There's
a cow on it, right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
But I don't know because, like, on the side of the bus is just the tagline is, oh, my gosh, it's Ashkenazen. Midwestern. I love it so much. Like, well, I love that they do finally miraculously make it into the city, and from there this is sort of the finale of the movie. They get to the train,
yeah,
and they part ways and you wish each other well, and I love that moment where Neil is sitting on the train by himself and he's reminiscing, but he's laughing. He's finally, after being such a fucking tight ass, he's finally laughing at himself, mm-hmm. you know, and not just Del, but himself. And there's something so like humbling about it that we've just been wanting from him for so long. And that's when he does start to put the clues together that something doesn't make sense with Del.
Yeah, he's actually not thinking about himself and his situation and his misery.
First time in the whole movie.
And seeing, wait a minute, something doesn't add up.
And it's the cliche but simple lesson, when you're not thinking about yourself, you start to think about other people, better things happen.
Yeah.
And given the fact that he's like, right at the, it's like Thanksgiving afternoon. It's like people are probably 3 o'clock. About to eat or are eating. And he should be getting home, you know, or old Neil would say, I should be getting home. But new Neil is like, I got to go back. And mm-hmm. when the way they cut it is really great, because you don't really realize until he goes right back into the station that he's back. And you see Del sitting there and you're like, why
is he there? And that, I think, was one of the first times that I kind of noticed a twist in a movie that you could mm-hmm. be misled.
Yeah.
That it this is a whole twist. Time I thought he did have a wife.
Right.
And he just hadn't been home in years. Like,
yeah.
I thought maybe to his parents' house. I didn't understand.
Yeah. And the way they, obviously, it's got the same kind of like sixth sense thing where you watch it again later, knowing what you know. It
makes sense.
And things add up and make a lot of sense. But obviously, at that moment when you first realize, I remember as a kid first seeing that scene, and it really, it's.
You just start to get chills. Me.
Yeah. It was like a little moment of growing up for me. Yeah. I remember being like,
there's a darkness.
Like, whoa. Like, and it is about thinking about other people and the fact that you don't know what people are going through. You just don't. And sometimes you assume and you think you know and you don't. And it's so unique that this comedy, this kind of silly, almost like, you know, not totally slapstick, but very, very silly road movie has an element of that, or, you know, that's sort of the twist of the movie.
I think the most Neil is actually sincere is when he says, Del, what are you doing here?
Yes.
You finally see who he really is. He's mm-hmm. being himself.
And it's this most selfless he's been the whole time.
Uh-huh.
It's like, I'm asking you now.
I'm seeing you.
Yeah, and I'm seeing, I came back to see you.
Ugh.
And then it's just like, all he says are like two lines. He just says, Marie's been dead for 8 years. I don't have a home.
I don't have a home.
And it's just then you get that reaction of Steve Martin, and it's like so fucking good. He says so much in that expression. Like, it makes me cry.
I know, and you don't know what's going to happen if you're seeing it for the first time.
You just think, oh my God, that's so sad. That's all you can think.
And you start to get the chills when you hear the news. Like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. And then there is...
Boom! And it's just like the best shot ever. Tear-jerking moment. They are holding the ridiculous trunk between them, carrying it together, and they are walking up to Neil's home where they are going to have Thanksgiving together, and they stick together is the whole point.
It's is like, the sweetest ending to a movie.
Oh my God.
Seeing someone show true kindness and... I mean, you know they walked far because there's no train stations that go by like a neighborhood
like
that.
They're
walking with this big thing. You just see the, and it's like, and they're so happy because when they can see the house.
Yeah.
It's like the end is near.
It's just so, oh my God, it's so good. I absolutely love it.
They make it home.
They made it home. And home had a lot of meanings.
You know what I always noticed? When they come in, mm-hmm. he introduces Del to his family, and he's addressing Del.
Yeah.
He's saying, this is my mother, my father, my in-laws, my kids. And then when he sees his wife, he speaks to her, mm-hmm. and he says, I'd like you to meet a friend.
It's so special.
It's like he loves his wife. He honors her that he would, you know, not say, Del, this is my wife.
Yeah.
I just always thought that was cute.
I love that. And I think, again, it only further proves my little theories that, like, that had to have meant so much to her. Because you can just see it in her reaction. It's like, wow. Like, he walks and he's not this perfect-looking, put-together guy that he's always been. He's been through shit. He's being real. He's being humble. He's being joyful. Like, he's a whole lighthearted version of himself. So it's like, in her eyes, you know, that's probably the person she fell in love with.
And she was worrying about him the whole time, so she's probably valuing him
and also his just role. To like see Del, it's like, oh, you're the guy that like you. I've heard about you. You've got my husband home safe. Like,
clearly, yeah, she addresses him as "Hello, Mr. Griffith." Yeah. Like, she already knew who he was.
Yeah,
so sweet.
Which I think was sweet because then it ended on his reaction when she says that, which I think meant so much. To him, like, oh, he's told his wife about me.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm a friend. To see me. Like, I'm a friend. I'm one in the family. Like, it's just so precious. I can't.
I remember being little, and you know, you don't understand the concept of movies. They kind of seem like real life, and you ask your parents, what happens next? Or did they stay friends? You know, and I remember asking and hoping that every year for Thanksgiving, Del came home, you know, maybe my mom told me that or something, but I just, that was always my like hope that Del would come every year for Thanksgiving.
And it's sweet because I think it's a symbol of like Thanksgiving is a time to like be there for people and to show them, you know, a compassion. And there's something so much to be said for that and reaching out to others and seeing what they need and seeing how to be there for them. So it's just, you know, the theme overall plays so much into the purpose of what we, you know, the made the purpose into Thanksgiving at this point. So why not just enjoy it and celebrate it for that? You know, I think there's something special about it.
Aside from all the laughs, ridiculous parts, there is so much heart in this movie. And if you're not crying when that music beat starts, there's something wrong with you.
It is so good. Like, it is tears. It's tears. Actually, today I listened to the music just to like.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I like looked it up on Spotify. There's only like three songs that are like the ones you hear that you love and know. And it's like, they just like the feels, man. Zero criticism for this movie and in a negative light. Yeah, I give it
5 stars.
For sure.
2 thumbs up.
Everything I got.
Like I said, it's in my top 5. It's just one of those movies I've seen so many times. It always holds up.
Oh, yeah.
There's never a, this part, or I remember, he says this coming moment. Up. It's like, I cannot wait to see that taxi door in front of Del.
Well, we have reached the end here, folks, but that's not all. We like to have us a nice little drinking game to go with the movie. So, Brie, have you any clever ideas?
I have 2. I'm excited for this.
Yeah, me too. I'm stoked. Okay. I've got my wine.
Number one, with your drink of choice, drink every time someone says the words shower curtain rings.
It's too good. Just, like, you're gonna get hammered. I'm ready.
It's said many times. Maybe not in that order. It might be shower curtain fella.
Yeah.
Or
best moment.
Or I sold him a set of shower curtain rings. And then every time you see the trunk.
Yes.
That big trunk. Because it comes and goes. It's not in every scene.
Totally. It's not all everywhere all the time.
But it's just this there. Reminder of, like, this lug of a guy has his big trunk.
I said for every time they are in a new vehicle, whether it is a car, a plane, a train, an automobile, whatever it is.
The bed of a truck.
The beginning of a, brand new part of the adventure. Take a sip. These guys, they're roughing it.
A taxi.
Yeah.
Definitely the first taxi.
Sketchy taxi. Oh, you got it. You might need 2 sips for that sketchy ass taxi because what is going on? That was scary. For the chug moment, the amazing marathon car rental scene where Neil totally cusses out Edie McClurg. Just the sweetest lady. Yes. She's talking about ambrosia salad with her friend on the phone when she's supposed to be working. I love her. Just chug. Keep going. You're going to need that.
He says it 18 times.
It's a whole minute. An entire minute. Can you do it? Because you got to get ready.
Yeah, this is a challenge. Take a shot when Neil Page goes to wet down his face.
Oh.
And he pulls up Del's whitey tighties that are soaking in the sink.
With the dirty socks.
Oh.
So gross. Oh. So gross. Why your socks have to be wet when you're in the snow.
And just to confirm that this is happening, Del yells from the room, "Hey, Neil, if you're going to brush your teeth.
Did you take my socks out of the sink?" Oh my God. Poor Neil. And then finally, for a finale, if you'd like, go ahead and finish your drink at the ultimate powerful, heartwarming moment when Del and Neil are holding the amazing trunk and taking it all the way home to Neil's house for that beautiful, gorgeous moment where they are home for Thanksgiving.
There you go.
And finish your drink. Yes.
Perfect. And make sure to watch that post-credit scene.
Yes, totally. It's just to remind full circle.
Every person in your life that can't make a decision, wasting everyone's time.
Just wasting away. Didn't even get to eat his dinner.
John Hughes loves a good post-credit scene.
He's the best. Fiona, thank you so much for tuning in with us. And thank you so much, Bree, for being my Binks today.
This is the best.
This has been such a great time.
I want to come back.
Yes, please. Oh, my God. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Pinterest, and Facebook. Don't forget to visit the website. Feel free to join, become a member, or subscribe. Special thank you to Bijan Sharifi for being our big sponsor and Bijan. My big brother, Bijan. Thank you to Fiona, our noisy kitten producer over here, being completely disruptive.
Yeah, I had full cat butt in my face at some point. Thanks, Fiona. Pat, for pouring us wine. And
yes, thank you to our bartender / my boyfriend for spoiling us with wine and cocktails every time we do this.
She's do you know so what's in ambrosia salad? Okay, this is a Midwestern thing.
It sounds like
salad.
It would
does
be.
Not mean lettuce.
It just means mayonnaise Midwest. With a bunch of cold shit.
It's like,
right? Am I right?
It can be cold
mayonnaise.
This ambrosia salad with Cool Whip. It's like
some sort of
marshmallows, maraschino cherries, I think pineapple. Yeah, pineapple, mandarin oranges. And tons of Cool Whip.
Holy shit. It's like
no,
a
just sugar. Just yeah. It's just sugar.
Pure sugar.
Anything in the Midwest that's a salad, check yourself. It's not going to be it's not going to be a Caesar or a Waldorf or a Sam's.
Fuck, even a Waldorf salad sounds more healthy than this salad.
Oh. A Waldorf salad.
And that's like mayonnaise-y or yogurt-y or
no,
something.
Well, isn't Waldorf salad with like walnuts and apples on
with like a
mixed greens?
Grapes.
Grapes, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It is on mixed greens, I think. But it's mostly that stuff. And then there's some greens to complement, garnish below on the plate.
I didn't know. Like there's Jell-O salad. Which is just like crap in Jell-O.
Just crap in
There's
Jell-O.
Something called cookie salad that like blew my mind. Because those two things I didn't know could go
Give
together.
Give it to me on my diet.
So what you do in a cookie salad?
I'll have a cookie salad, please. Thank you.
A cookie salad from, I'm sorry if I'm getting this wrong. This is what I remember because I did have one Thanksgiving in Minnesota. They had Twix. And I remember fudge stripe cookies crumpled up and mixed in Cool Whip.
What in the crap?
I feel like there has to be more ingredients.
I'm fascinated.
That's all I remember.
I'm fascinated.
And everyone was down for it. They were like, oh, the cookie salad. Like, who brought the cookie salad? And I'm thinking like.
Swiss salad is just a bunch of shit
stuff mixed together.
With either a dairy or a mayonnaise base.
Or Jell-O base.
Or Jell-O base. Yeah. Okay.